This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. With Congress away from Washington on summer recess and a hotly contested election around the corner, the government's budgetary process is crawling along slowly. That's nothing new, especially in an era of tax cuts, budget deficits, and political gridlock. But for the third branch of government, the federal judiciary, this year's budget process is turning into a nightmare, as NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Some stories have no villain. They're just stories of how the system is working, or in some cases not working, and what the repercussions are. The budget for the nation's federal court system is minuscule, just 0.2% of the budget pie. And yet its importance is enormous. After all, the courts are responsible for protecting public safety, individual rights, for arbitrating differences in the economy, and for monitoring convicted felons after their release. And yet, when it comes to seeking money from Congress, the federal courts in recent years have ended up with the short end of the stick. Ralph Meekham is the director of the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts.
The judiciary, in a very real sense, is a victim of process. It's also a victim of the way our government is established, because the third branch of government tends to be neglected and sometimes forgotten. We have no constituency on Capitol Hill as such.
Since 2002, the federal courts have seen their budgets cut every year, at the same time that their caseload is soaring. Judge Carolyn King of Texas is chief judge of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and chair of the Judicial Conference Executive Committee.
We have no control over how many cases are put into our system. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to take those cases and to do right by them.
In the current fiscal year that's about to conclude, Congress and the Bush administration agreed to cut all non-defense discretionary spending by 1%. But in the federal courts, that translated into a cut of 32%. The reason is that some 60% of the federal court's costs are fixed: rent, security, judicial pay, etc. The rent that the federal courts pay to the General Services Administration, for instance, goes up 8% each year. Security costs increased dramatically after 9/11. Federal judges across the country say they have already cut everything else to the bone, and anything more would leave the courts unable to fully function. That, however, may be what's about to happen. With Congress and the White House at something of a stalemate over budget priorities, it is widely expected that domestic discretionary spending, including the courts, will be funded for the coming year at the same level as the current year. That is referred to in the trade as a hard freeze. Again, Judge King.
That would be a crisis, a real, honest-to-God crisis.
Just to stay even, she says, the federal courts need a 6% increase in funding. And if they don't get it, she and other judges across the country say the results will be draconian for the public. Estimates are that money to pay lawyers for indigent defendants will run out sometime early next summer. And without lawyers, there can't be trials. Moreover, under federal law, an accused must be tried within 70 days of his arrest or released. Next summer, it's also expected that money to pay jurors in civil cases will run out in many jurisdictions. Of the 21,000 federal court employees, there could be as many as 5,000 layoffs, or there will be furloughs, and the result in either case will be shuttered courthouse doors many days of the year. Add to that some other facts. The very technological systems the courts have relied on to operate efficiently will fall into disrepair. The lag time in pre-sentence reports prepared by probation officers will grow even longer. Along the southwest border, Judge King says that cuts in probation staff have already jumped the lag time from 3 to 6 months between conviction and sentencing. During that time, she notes, the defendant is housed in a county jail, with the federal government paying the costs. For Judge Marilyn Huff, the chief judge of the Southern District of California, the prospect of further cuts is horrifying. Her court covers the border area from San Diego to Arizona, where there are 91 million border crossings each year.
That translates into cases coming into our court for immigration, drug, environmental issues, anti-terrorism issues, and other cases that need to be handled.
Her court ranks fourth in the nation for criminal felony cases and first in the number of offenders being supervised on release by probation officers. Congress recently approved new judgeship slots and filled them, but the courts did not get more money for the new judges to have court reporters, an absolute necessity. So Huff had to move some money around. Resources are already so scarce that at one point a desperate Huff asked a 90-year-old semi-retired judge to help out on a couple of cases. And in the probation department, she says, if there's a freeze, she would have to fire probation officers or make cuts in programs.
I don't want to cut the drug testing or the rehabilitation services and then have people reoffend in the community that only costs more money.
Huff is typical of judges in highly populated districts. Judge Donald Malloy, the chief judge in Montana, is typical of judges in rural areas. His district is the fourth largest in the country at 147,000 square miles. It has five division offices staffed by as many as six and as few as two people, plus IT and accounting personnel. The criminal caseload alone has jumped from 100 to 150 cases per judge in 3 years. And if there is a so-called hard freeze in funding next year, Malloy says that he will have to furlough each of his employees for 5 weeks, meaning that courts will be closed for all practical purposes one day a week, half the year. He can't imagine how he will do business.
We averaged 42 trials per judge last year. That's the highest in the nation. And we actually have jurors that travel 400 miles one way for jury service. If we're closing a day, that means we've got people who are traveling 400 miles and we're sending them home and then bringing them back or keeping them over the weekend.
The results in civil cases will be just as bad.
The bankruptcy court in Montana has one judge, and they have hearings from Billings, Great Falls, Helena, and Missoula, and they do it by teleconferencing. Well, rather than lay off employees in the bankruptcy court, what they're going to do is probably shut that system down, which then means that people in bankruptcy and the lawyers in that particular area will all have to travel to Butte, Montana, to the bankruptcy court. And, of course, the added costs then go to, you know, people who obviously, if they're in bankruptcy, don't have a lot of money.
Federal court employees are struggling, too, often working nights and weekends without pay. Elaine Terenzi is head of the probation office in the Central District of Florida, covering Orlando, Tampa, and Jacksonville. With significant personnel cuts in her office already, she's instituted a program to stop supervising lesser offenders upon their release.
So the caseloads have become more condensed with more serious offenders. I mean, even as we speak, I have six officers out today conducting a search on a sex offender's home. And they're searching his home, they're examining his computer and doing a forensic evaluation of the computer system because he's an internet-based sex offender. All of that takes time.
Judge King, the chairman of the Judicial Conference Executive Committee, says the war on terror and the war on crime converge on her doorstep in immigration cases, document fraud cases, and even drug cases. That's why the federal courts are asking for an exception to whatever across-the-board freeze Congress agrees on.
If they don't put a freeze on the Department of Homeland Security, we ask that they not freeze us either, because there's nothing worse than a situation in which the people who are delivering business to your door have an increased budget and you don't.
But federal judges can't give campaign contributions, they can't organize voters, they don't have an army of lobbyists, and at this point, they don't have much hope of getting Congress's attention for an exception. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.